Track 12, Musical Memories. It's March, so it's time to spring to attention and start to march. Here is Maggie with Alison Applin's second feature on marches.
Well, if you were listening to Just Talk this time last year, you might remember that this slot was all about musical marches. Wedding marches, in fact. So I thought we might continue that theme for this month and find another selection of marches from across the centuries. This time I think we might have a listen to some written for military or ceremonial purposes. So off we go then. Left, right, off you go. Let's start way back in history with a piece by the English composer William Byrd, circa 1540 to 1623. Arguably one of the greatest composers of the English Renaissance, Byrd was also a fine singer and keyboard performer. He was a devout Catholic, but despite openly professing his religion, he managed to escape any serious consequences owing to the fact that his most influential patron was the Protestant Queen Elizabeth I. Another of Byrd's patrons was the 17th Earl of Oxford, Edward de Vere, and it's Byrd's composition entitled The Earl of Oxford's March, which is to be our first march today. It may have been written in response to a specific request or simply to honour this patronage. Music had long been used in battle to rouse the spirits or to frighten the enemy. It was also the custom at Renaissance courts to announce the entrance of persons of high rank by playing a tucket, a flourish of trumpets and drums. The tune which introduces the Earl of Oxford march has all the hallmarks of such a tucket. It is dashing and military in character, calling up visions of battle, perhaps in deference to Earl's dreams of martial glory. The piece was originally written for keyboard and was included in a collection of keyboard pieces entitled My Lady Neville's Book, dating from 1591. Continuing the battle theme, but moving forward almost 300 years, we arrive in Vienna. John Strauss Sr., the father of the guy who composed all those waltzes, composed the Radetzky March in 1848 to celebrate the victory of the Austrian Empire under Field Marshal Joseph Radetzky von Radetz over Italian forces at the Battle of Custoza during the First Italian War of Independence. Although its tone is more celebratory than martial, it soon became popular among regimented marching soldiers, and indeed, when it was played in front of Austrian army officers, they broke into spontaneous clapping and stamping of feet. And if any of you ever listen to the annual New Year's Day concert from Vienna, you will be familiar with the foot stamping and clapping, which always accompanies this regular encore. So I expect you to do the same now as you listen to John Strauss Sr.'s Radetzky March. Well, I hope that's given you a good workout. Our next piece possibly needs no introduction to British listeners. The Dambusters March by Eric Coates is the theme music for the 1955 British war film The Dambusters, which tells the story of Operation Chastise, or the Dambusters Raid. This was an attack on German dams carried out on the night of 16th-17th of May 1943 using the special bouncing bombs developed by Barnes Wallace, with the aim of damaging the hydroelectric plants in the German Ruhr Valley and causing large areas to be flooded. Although the music has become synonymous with the film, Eric Coates' son Austin revealed in a BBC radio interview that the piece was not actually written for the film. Apparently his father had been intent on composing a march which emulated the works of Edward Elgar, such as the Pomp and Circumstance marches. But just a few days after completing the work, Coates was contacted by the film's producers to see if he would compose a suitable piece. Coates actively disliked writing film music, and at first he turned down the request. But when he was told that this film would be of national importance, he relented and decided that this piece would be perfect. And of course, so it has turned out to be. As Elgar's Pomp and Circumstances marches were the inspiration for the Dambusters March, we'd better hear one of those now. In fact, Elgar composed five such marches, of which number one is the most famous and usually referred to as Land of Hope and Glory. Elgar took the phrase pomp and circumstance from a line in Shakespeare's Othello. Shakespeare's words proclaim the assumption that the splendid show of military pageantry, the pomp, has no connection with the terror, the circumstance, of actual warfare. Composed in 1901, the piece was first performed at a promenade concert in that year under the baton of Sir Henry Wood. The following year, the tune of the central section was used as a coronation ode for King Edward the Seventh. Edward had requested that this section be made into a song for his coronation, and so Elgar engaged the poet A.C. Benson to set words to the tune. It was first played at the Proms as Land of Hope and Glory in the last concert of the 1905 season, and of course it's been a fixture at almost every last night since, despite being the subject of some ongoing controversy. I will let you make up your own minds on that. In the 1920s, the English composer William Walton had been regarded by many as an avant-garde composer, but by the mid-1930s he was seen as being part of the more traditional English scene, And so it was that his orchestral march Crown Imperial came to be written. On the accession of Edward VIII in 1936, the BBC wanted to commission a coronation march in the genre of Elgar's aforementioned pomp and circumstance marches. Elgar had died in 1934, and Britain's best-known composer was now Ralph Vaughan Williams, who had no interest in writing such music. So it was William Walton who was chosen. Of course, by the time the BBC formally commissioned Walton, Edward had abdicated, and the forthcoming coronation was that of his brother and successor, George VI. Apparently, Walton wrote the piece in just a fortnight, and like Elgar, found inspiration for the title in Shakespeare, this time from a speech in Henry V. The march was duly performed at the coronation on the 12th of May 1937, being played during the procession of the Dowager Queen Mary into Westminster Abbey. It has subsequently been played at many state occasions, including Queen Elizabeth II's coronation in 1953, the wedding of Prince William to Catherine Middleton in 2011, and at the coronation of King Charles III in 2023. It is indeed a very majestic piece. Let's hear it. Away from English pageantry and coming to the end of our marching, let's finish with a grand march. The story of Verdi's opera Aida is long and complicated, and I will not bore you with the synopsis. Suffice to say that it is set in ancient Egypt and is a timeless story of love and betrayal, set against the backdrop of war. The Egyptians win the war, and a triumphal procession celebrates this victory. The Grand March from Aida is justly famous for its use of trumpets, providing a regal and triumphant sound, and it has become synonymous with the idea of a victory procession. As well as the trumpets, Verdi employs a large orchestra and a full chorus to create a sense of grandeur. So, here it is for a rousing finale.
Thank you, Maggie. As the Chinese would say, that was quite a long march.